He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you here on a Thursday. Gonna do a little player profile action today. I haven't done one of these in a while, and that's thanks to all of our great guests. So thanks again to all of our guests who have been phenomenal throughout this offseason of golf. But we wanted to do a little more player profile stuff. We've done Jordan Spieth. We've done Patrick Reed. Those were great. Those were a lot of fun. And now we're looking forward today to Ricky Fowler, who we're going to break down. I'm sure all the local people will get a thrill out of us going through Ricky's career. I want to remind everybody, find us on social media at The 73rd Hole. Search 73rd Hole on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We will pop up. And wherever you are listening to this podcast, go ahead and rate and subscribe. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Taylor Williams with me as always. Taylor, a little Ricky action today. A little solid orange, a little Sunday orange, a little players champion, the fifth major, if you will.
Oh, boy. Yeah, here we go. We're going to get started with this, aren't we? But we'll go ahead and get that out of the way. That way we don't have to hear the atrocity spoken again.
I mean, if you can name a better three-hole finish than Ricky at the Players, I'll wait.
Are you talking about on 16 when he was hitting a fade and it was hit on the left side of the water and hopped back to the pin where he tapped in for eagle?
I'm talking about whenever the guy picked a landing spot the size of a dime, a foot over the water, landed it on there, nearly held it for an albatross, and won the golf tournament. Yes, that's what I'm referencing.
You sound about 95% of the people that I know that are Ricky fans. So, and I know people that are more bigger Ricky fans than you are. You were a bigger Ricky fan in your younger years than you are now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I am. To tell you the truth, I've always loved Ricky. I'm an Oklahoma State guy, so I've always pulled for Ricky. But I just feel like we've waited so long for Ricky to break through. And when I say breakthrough, I win a major. We don't need to beat around the bush. I'm talking about winning a major. We finished top five in all four of them in, what was that, 15?
14.
14, okay. So that's been a while now, and we've been waiting for more from Ricky, and I don't know if that's because of all the advertisements and Puma and the flashiness and the orange and everything that, you know, was this Ricky Fowler star is what we were presented with whenever he first came onto the tour. It was like, this guy's a star. He's going to be one of the elites in the game. And while Ricky, to this point in his career, has had a really good PGA Tour career, I don't think it fits in the star category alongside Rory and Brooks and DJ and JT and Spieth. You just look at the accomplishments of these other guys. I just thought that was what we were going to get with Ricky, and it hasn't been what we've gotten with Ricky for one reason or another. So I still pull for Ricky, but I'm past the point of going into every major thinking, okay, this could be his week, and hoping that he gets it done. It's one of those things where he's not an afterthought, but I certainly don't look at it the way I did several years back where I thought, okay, one of these four this year is going to be Ricky's.
Yeah, he came in with a lot of expectations. You know, 2014, like we mentioned, the year he finished top five in all the majors. And I have to pull it up if I'm not mistaken, but he finished fifth at the Masters that year, and then he didn't finish worse than third the other two. He either had 2 seconds or 2/3 in there and a second, somewhere along those lines. So, I mean, it was a fabulous year. You actually look back on the year 2014, you know, he had those top fives in all the majors, but it was actually, besides when he first came out on tour, obviously, one of his first few years.
You want his 2014 results?
Yes, I am.
At the four majors. T5 at the Masters, T2 at the U.S. Open, T2 at the Open, T3 at the PGA.
And so the T2 at the U.S. Open in 2014, that's when it was at Pinehurst. Martin Keimer won by about 8 shots. So yeah, I mean,
Martin Keimer went nuts.
So it wasn't like he was in contention. Read off the other finishes again to me one more time.
T5 Masters, T2 U.S. Open, T2 at the Open, and then T3 at the PGA.
Okay, yep. 2014, that PGA, that was the Rory Phil. That was the night time when Rory hit after him, and there was a big fuss about it.
Wasn't Phil getting cranky?
He was kind of throwing a fit, yeah. So that kind of thing. And then Rory won Liverpool that year, 2014, by, I don't know, two or three shots. So, I mean, Ricky was a little bit more there in that one. And he was definitely there at Valhalla, too. And I remember watching it. You know, there's so many shots that Rory hit that day that will live in infamy. Some of the best shots he hit, you know, some of those huge drives, great iron shots he hit on some of the par threes coming down the stretch. And the shot out of the bunker he hit on 16 was incredible.
Quick trivia before we move on from this Ricky major finishes. So he had four top fives that year in 2014. How many top fives do you think he has in majors since?
Since then, I would say, I know.
He had four of them that year.
I know he finished second in the 2017 Masters because it really screwed my one and done pool.
2018.
I'm sorry. And then, so that was definitely 20 majors. So that would be one. I'll say he has one more in there, so I'll say two.
He's got three top five finishes in majors since he finished in the top five in all four in 2014. It was the 2018 Masters, like you said, and then in 2017 at the U.S. Open and the PGA, he was T5. So he had that phenomenal year in 2014, and that's what made, I think, me, along with a lot of other people, go in the next couple years thinking, okay, one of these has to be Ricky's, and then no. After 2014, the next 2 years, he had a T12 at the Masters in 2015, the very next start. Other than that, it was cut. T30, T46, T33. So after 2014, where he just crushed it in the majors, it's been a whole lot of nothing since.
Yeah, and you know, we go back in his young career, and you know, it at the time it seemed like it was just more local feel. You know, because I said we live in Oklahoma, you're a big Oklahoma State fan yourself, and you went there, and a lot of my friends are OSU, especially OSU golf fans, because they have such a tremendous program up there, and I have a lot of friends that played up there as well. And so you know, you hear all these things about, oh, he's coming out, he's going to be so good, and you go back. So I'm looking at his year end where he ranked in the official world golf rankings. Going back to 2010, he joined the tour in 2009. By the end of 2010, he's ranked 28th in the world. So I mean, he came out, and while he didn't get his first official PGA Tour win until 2012. That's the one that we had brought up a few times where he played Rory, beat Rory, and I believe it was DA points in the playoff.
It was DA points. What is DA points doing in a playoff with Ricky and Rory? Good for him.
And it just goes to show me good players, though. I mean, DA points has had a tremendous career on the PGA Tour. I mean, you know, he's made a lot of money, you know, obviously, and you know, he's been able to have a little bit of longevity out there. But
he was a regular in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am leaderboard.
Yes,
every
he
year.
Was. He was, every yeah. Year. I don't know. I need to look up who his partner was, because whoever his partner was probably really enjoyed playing with him.
Yeah, his partner might have been sandbagging a little bit, too, because they were up there like every year.
Sandbagging like Larry Fitzgerald has been these last few years.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't want to hate on Larry Fitzgerald. We're on a whole different rabbit hole here, but he might be sandbagging a little bit.
He's sandbagging, but he's one of the greatest to ever do it. So not only just on the field, but off the field too. Just a class act guy here. Nothing about that. But down out of that rabbit hole that we went down. So, you know, at the end of 2010, he's ranked 28th in the world. You know, so then he's got all these expectations, you know, and he kind of floats around that same mark. So the end of 2011, he's 32nd. And in 2012, he's 31. End of 2013, he is 40th. So, you know, he's not really getting that big jump. Like you mentioned, some of these like DJ, Brooks, mm-hmm. some of these other guys, even Spieth, who's low now, got up to number one in the world. I have to look back. I'm pretty sure all these guys that you just listed off at one point were number one in the world.
Everyone I listed was at one point number one.
Yeah. Ricky,
what you just described there is hovering.
Yes.
He's hovering. He wasn't really moving.
Yeah. He wasn't able to take that next step like some of these other guys were. And even like a Jason Day, who moved up to number one at one point, you know, in 2015, he's even fallen off with some injury concerns and all that. But it just goes to show, you know, while he's not, like you mentioned, he's not in that kind of elite class, because he never at one point was able to ever to take his game to that next level, to where, you know, he's winning tournaments by, you know, 5, 6, 7 shots, you know, or like Rory won 2 majors by 8 shots, you know, stuff like that, you know, just not able to separate himself like that. I mean, we'll go into some of the metrics here later on, and he's, you know, his numbers are tremendous. You know, his strokes gained, you know, over since 2015, like his worst in strokes gained, besides this year that had just started, was like 15th or something, you know. So, I mean, he's a tremendous player, and it just, you know, it's like he's kind of got it figured out, but at the same time, you know, it may just be a mental thing. You know, we'll also go into that a little bit more as well, but just not able to, you know, kind of put the pedal on the metal and, you know, get those high, good finishes. And obviously, maybe if he's ever able to get that major, it might be able to start something crazy, because it's obvious that how much talent that he has. But, you know, just to we need to see him be able to do something like that to take that next jump before we can consider him in that elite class, which is why I consider him one of the more overrated players, not because he's not a great player, but just because, you know, like you see, like you mentioned earlier, how many kids do you see with the Puma orange hat, you know, flat bill? I mean, you may not see as much anymore as we used to back when he came out, but he was such a...
You still see quite a bit of it, though.
People
love Ricky.
Yeah,
they do.
He's
they love
such
him.
An icon in the game. I mean, and he's such a great guy, too, but like I said, he's sometimes grouped in that class with some of those other guys, and you know, just with with the way that his finishes are, not necessarily his game, but the way that his finishes have been in some of these bigger tournaments, I don't believe that he belongs in that group.
Yeah, his highest that he's finished in the official world golf ranking at the end of a season was in 2015. He finished sixth that year. The only other year that he finished, two other years in the top 10, 10th at the end of 2014, and then at the end of 2017, he finished seventh in the official world golf ranking. So he's been a guy hovering around the top 10 for about 5 years there, from 2014 through the end of 2018. The lowest he finished a season in the official world golf ranking was 12, and that's like we talked about, 2014 was the year he finished top five in all the majors. So that's when he kind of hit his stride, started playing better golf. But even then, we're still looking, just real quick, we're still looking for more wins, because that's what gets you into the conversation with, like, DJ's been so consistent as a winner. So has Justin Thomas. Jordan Spieth, you can now say he's been less consistent, but he had a serious burst of winning there for a couple of years where he was nearly unbeatable. And then you look at Ricky, and Ricky's won five tour events from 2012 through 2019, the Wells Fargo in 2012, the Players in 2015. That was his second tour win.
Ain't that crazy?
That is hard to believe, really.
He had been out on tour for 6 years at that point. Yeah. Six, five and a half, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and that was his second tour win. The Deutsche Bank Championship that same year in September, and then in 2017, he won the Honda. I remember that one. And then just last year in 2019, he won in Phoenix, but that's only five tour wins for a guy who came out in 2009 and who's been lauded as one of the stars of the game. It's just it's tough to wrap your mind around.
So
that.
That's what, 11 years now, you will include this. So we'll say 10 years, and that's five. So that's a win every other season.
Yeah, I mean, he's winning one tournament every other year. It's just, I don't know. I can't make sense of it, because, like you said, let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the numbers, because the numbers tell us that this should be a guy who wins more than once every other year. I mean, a guy like Ricky's probably playing, what, 20 events a year?
And we go by the official world golf rankings, how many tournaments he's played. And some of these are also European tour events. You know, like I said, he won over in Abu Dhabi. He's won the Scottish Open, yep, that big tournament before the British. So he has some other big wins on here that we consider, you know, whenever we talked earlier in the year about the Azinger comments about the strength of field stuff, that would have higher strength of fields. And his actually first win was in 2011 on the Korean tour event, where he beat Rory by six shots. So, I mean, you know, he has some other wins in there, but just still not on the classification of these bigger wins. You know, it's like, if we're going to bang Tommy Fleetwood for winning those tournaments, you know, why are we going to give Ricky the credit for winning them too? You know, so it's, you know, you got to be able to pick and choose your battles here. But going back onto the numbers here, I mean, you know, like I mentioned earlier, his strokes gained total statistics, you know, last year he was 14th, you know, this 2018 he was 11th, 2017 he was actually first, out of every single player, gained more strokes than any player on tour. I mean, that's everyone, 2017 best, and he led the tour in strokes gained putting that year as well, so obviously he had something clicking there. And he's always got remarked as having one of the best putting strokes out there, and I believe he may be top three or five technically wise, but putting technique is 10% of the battle, if that. You know, it's all feel on that, but that's down a different rabbit hole. So strokes gained total in 2016 was sixth, and strokes gained total 2015 was 14th. And then, 2014, which actually the year where he had the top five majors, his strokes gained total was 35th. So he's actually improved his game from the numbers standpoint, you know, his overall game since the five majors, or the four top fives. Yes. And, but yet still hasn't got to see the Deutsche Bank's a playoff event. So, I mean, that's a big tournament, you know? So, I mean, he's able to, you know, get the job done somewhere, but it's like, you know, is it just a mental thing, you know, maybe like Phil had, where he just couldn't get over the hump in some of the majors? You know, I remember when we had Craig Humphreys on, we asked him, you know, if he thinks Ricky would ever win a major. And it's, you know, it's hard to see right here, you know, that we can't agree with him, where he's just so talented, you know, it's hard to see that he can't get done. You know, I mean, very similar to Sergio. You know, Sergio got all the way up to number two in the world at one point, and it took him, was it 20 years almost? He came out 99, won 2017 Masters, took him 18 years. So, I mean, you know, we bang on Ricky for not having a major, but... And how old is he now? Was he 30?
He's probably 32, if I was guessing.
Let's see,
I don't have it in front of me.
31, birthday's December 13th, 1988. So, yeah, just turned 31.
Okay.
If he's able to keep his longevity and health up, you know, he'll have a little bit of time out there. And, you know,
he'll have another 10, 12 years that you think probably that's when you can really still compete for major championships.
When we get into some of his swing technical stuff that I noticed earlier, we can even go back into that, because I think he may have some issues going forward with his back going like that. But nevertheless, you know, with his age, he still has time to get the job done. And like we said, you know, even since the all top fives in the majors, his game technically has improved. You know, it's just, but we look at the numbers this year in the small sample size, he was not having a very good year in 2020 at all.
No, he was not. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw out 08, 09, and 2020, because in those 3 years combined, he only played 18 events, obviously the shortened season this year, and then whenever he was first coming out onto the tour. So from 2010 through 2019, a decade, when he was playing a minimum of 20 was the fewest tournaments he played any of those years, he played 252 tournaments over those 10 years. So that's 25.2 a year. We said he wins one every other year. So he's winning about one out of every 50 tournaments that he enters. One out of 50, man. That's...
And think of good enough. One out of 50, so that's 2%. So, and think about it, what Tiger in his first 100 events he played was, what, 25.3%?
Yeah. And I don't want to compare him to Tiger.
That wasn't my point of saying that. My point is we're going into the Tiger greatness point, too. That's kind of what I'm putting out here, you know. So,
talk more about how great Tiger is, because this is a guy who's exactly a really good player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, you even went into like DJ, you know, he had the streak of winning an event for how many every years, you know, straight. So he's been able to have that longevity as well. And it's just, you know, like I said, it may take Ricky to be able to get, you know, just that, you know, once you get through the door, the floodgates just kind of open kind of thing, you know. So, I mean, maybe eventually once all this play starts, you know, he'll be able to get it figured out. And he's such a local name around here that's grown so much fame. And so I know there'd be a lot of people and a lot of my friends who'd be ecstatic to see him finally break through. But I'm going to have to see it before I can believe it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. You mentioned the floodgates. It's about that time of year in the state of Oklahoma when the floodgates will be opening. And with the rain comes the hail. And when the hail comes, you need to give McRae Roofing a call. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and Exteriors. Are a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, friend of the show, is the local owner of McRae Roofing. He views your roof like a canvas. He wants to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you here on the 73rd hole. You mentioned some of the technical stuff in Ricky's swing. Now, Ricky's swing's pretty unique. It is. It's pretty unique. And I don't know. It seemed like, what was it, maybe 2 years ago, him and Butch were working on some stuff to try to help alleviate some of the stress and the tension that he puts on his back.
I think it was even earlier than that. It was about the time whenever he had the all the top five majors, because we'll go back.
That long ago?
It was, because you go back and look at the tape, and that's kind of what I was going to break into. You know, whenever he first came out, you know, he was known for having the real quick, flat tempo, you know, getting underneath it, you know, putting a lot of torque, staying, keeping that spine angle straight, but with how fast he spin the hips turning, you know, that low, I mean, it hurt my lower back just looking at it. And then you go back, you know, that's what I was looking at. His major finishes that top 5 year to see, you know, what was I seeing technically different there between what we're seeing now. And from what I see, he's going back to a lot of his old tendencies. The swing's flatter than it was. He's got a little bit quicker tempo than he did. He's not as fluid, obviously, down, because, you know, everything's just a little bit out of sync a lot. And I think that, you know, we were actually looking at it earlier, his last year, his final, his round-by-round scoring average. And let me pull it up here real fast just to make sure I have the numbers. So in last year, his scoring average, you know, because we were kind of talking about, you know, it seemed like Ricky was playing fairly decent, but yet he would just fall off the leaderboard. And so last year, 2019, he ranked 15th in first-round scoring average. He ranked 28th in second-round scoring average. Third-round scoring average, he was 21st. And then on fourth-round scoring average last year, he was 123rd on the tour.
Yikes.
So, that, I mean, it just goes to show that the dramatic drop-off in that he had. I mean, the other one's 69.45, 69.6, 69.2, and then final round was 70.83. I mean,
he's almost a stroke and a half higher in the final round.
And obviously the course is set up a little tougher, you know, and all that. So, I mean, you know, it'll increase by a point how many ever. But
it's not just that, though. I mean, we watch the tournaments. Well, it's not just that.
Well, it goes by the rank, too. He's literally 100 points. 100 you know, lower ranked than he was in any of the other ones. So, yeah, obviously the scores will be a little higher, but not anywhere close to that. You know, not to the discrepancy. If it was on a normal rate, he'd rank in the top 30, or even if he was a little off, he'd still be in the top 50 or 60.
So let me ask you this then. How much of that do you think then is, because Ricky, you know, he wears the orange and all this stuff, and obviously he has the endorsement deals, but it's not like Ricky went up and asked the media to make him a star. And it's not like he went up and asked Golf Channel to constantly show the highlights of him winning at the Players. You know, the media loves him because he's flashy and the kids love him and all that stuff. So that has added pressure to Ricky Fowler. So how much of his failure to perform on Sundays has to do with that added pressure that's been put on him because so many people want to see him be one of the stars of the game?
You know, that's like we mentioned in all of our other player profiles. You know, unfortunately, that's the one thing we can't measure is what's going on between the ears. I think, you know, we brought up how he's going back to some of his old technical issues. I think that has a lot to do with it, in my opinion. You know, because we were looking up, because originally we thought that it may have been his putting that was the issue. You know, we thought that maybe his putter got cold on the weekends, but you look in statistically over his whole career, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of deviation. Even a lot of years, he actually puts better on the weekend than he has on the first 2 days, which was kind of surprising. But I think just going back to some of those old issues that he had, you know, getting that quicker tempo and not being as fluid as he was back when he was winning, or I'm sorry, finishing in the top five in all those majors, going to keep bringing that up because that was like the golden era of Ricky. You know, it's like the next few years, you know, he was great. You know, he won a couple times, you know, and won some big events. And obviously, we looked at his strokes gained, so his game was getting better. But, you know, that was kind of when the hype was real. You know, that was like, you know, because not very many players had done that ever, you know, top five in all four majors.
Well, and in 2014, he would have been, what, 25 years old?
Yeah,
so he's young gun. At 25 years old, finishing top five in all four majors, that's a lot different than, you know, being 31 years old and still not having one. We're still looking for it. And, you know, I'll say this. In 2018, he played great at Augusta in 2018. Nobody wanted to see Patrick Reed win that Masters. Everybody wanted to see Ricky win that Masters. And the score Ricky posted would have won it most years. And Ricky might have deserved to win it, but another guy got hot. And that's part of it, too. You know, Ricky finally puts it all together at Augusta on a Sunday, and he puts together a championship-caliber round of golf, birdies 18. What happens? The other guy doesn't falter. The other guy doesn't miss a beat. And Patrick Reed ends up winning the Masters. Ricky doesn't. And here we are still searching for his first major. That's just part of it. But, you know, the numbers would tend to indicate that he should get a major at some point in his career. His putting. Do you like what he does with his putting? Obviously, the numbers back up that he's a pretty good putter. I tried it one time. The whole, you know, narrow stance, close to the ball, hovering the putter. Felt super weird to me, but it obviously works for Ricky.
It just looks so natural, you know, to me. And that's what, you know, you notice the pendulum of the head, you know, it just flows back. And it's always good tempo, you know. I don't know if I've ever seen him jab a putt, you know, which you see a lot of players do. Even some of the best putters, you know, you'll see down the stretch where their arms kind of flinch a little bit, you know, where they might look up a little bit. I haven't seen too much of that in Ricky on his putting. So, you know, going strokes, this is his strokes gained putting over the last few years. So 2019, last year, where we even talk about where he's faltering down the stretch, he was 13th in strokes gained putting. 2018, 43rd, fell back a little bit. We brought this up earlier. 2017 led the tour in strokes gained putting, and he actually had a fairly good year in 2017. He led the tour in strokes gained total. That was one of the things we brought up in our two previous player profiles, was that Reed and Spieth had their two best putting years in their two worst statistical years,
right?
You know, or their two worst win result years, you know. And in 2017, you know, Ricky had a fairly good year. You know,
he won the Honda.
He won the Honda. Yep. He actually won the Hero at the end of that year.
He did win the Hero, yeah.
Which, you know, it's 18-man field or whatever, but some of the best players, you know, I remember.
And he won it by four strokes. It wasn't close.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember when Tiger was coming back, you know, what was it, the 2010 or 11 Hero that Tiger won to kind of get everything rejuvenated? You remember what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, so we were so hyped when that happened, so, you know, now we got to give Ricky the credit for winning that, which
I think the Hero's a good win. I mean, it's not a sanctioned PGA Tour event, but it's an 18-man field, but of those 18 guys, how many are in the top 25 in the world? 12, 14?
All of them, if not.
All of them, yeah.
Close to it. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, so that's a high-quality win. You know, we'll go through, you know, I see BMW, he finished T2nd, which is a playoff event. PGA finished 5th. Bridgestone finished 9th. Scottish Open 9th. Finished 3rd at the Quicken Loans, which I believe that's when it was still at Congressional.
And these were all 2017?
It's 2017, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Tied 5th at the U.S. Open. And then, so, I mean, you know, this is a very good year that he had there, you know. So, I mean, you know, so that the putting and everything was kind of working together for him that year. So it seemed like even then, you know, he was going in the right direction, you know. And then, like I said, the world ranking just kind of increased, you know. At the end of 2018, he was 11th, so he was still good. But at the end of last year, he was 23rd. And what is he now, 27th?
2017, just to go to, you know, consistency and longevity over the course of a season, playing well for an entire year, it was his highest in career earnings that year. And he only played 21 events in 2017. And he made more money than he did with 23 starts in 16. He made more money than he did with 26 starts in 14. Now, obviously, some purses and things like that have gone up, but he was very consistent throughout 2017.
But it shows that, you know, if you're making more money, normally you're finishing better and the better events because they pay
better
more
events. Yeah.
Because they pay more money.
Yeah. It's crazy to me, though, that he made $6 million in 2017. In 2014, he only made $4.8 million. And in 2014, he had top five finishes at all four majors. And I just pulled up the WGC stuff. In the four WGC events in 2014, in Mexico, he was T44, but he finished 3rd at the match play, T8 at the FedEx St. Jude Invitational, and then T3 at the HSBC Champions. So in 14, he had 4 top fives in majors, 2 more top fives in World Golf Championship events, and a top 10 in a World Golf Championship event. So that was, to me, kind of the year of Ricky, if you will, despite not winning a major where everybody was talking about him. And he didn't even have a win that year. Did not win a tournament in 2014 despite all that success.
No, he didn't. And I brought it up earlier. You know, I think the reason you'll see a lot on the money list, too, is that he had 7 missed cuts that year. So, I mean, you know, he was...
So the consistency wasn't there.
The consistency wasn't there.
He showed up for the big events.
Yes, showed up for the big events, which is kind of a Brooks Koepka thing that we rip him for now, you know. But, you know, obviously we were the hype was real then. But, you know, in 2017, you know, I don't think the heroes included on the money list, so that one wouldn't count. But he'd have another win. He'd have, looks like on here, he had 3 seconds as well. I'm not sure. I'd have to go in and make sure that they were all tour sanctioned events. There's 1, there's 2. He finished 2nd at the Memorial, which is one of the, I believe it is the biggest purse besides a World Golf event and a major.
And the players, yes, absolutely.
Or tour championship, obviously, with all the FedEx stuff. So it's the biggest of the non-big events, essentially. Yeah. So I mean, you know, so that's where all the money came from. You know, the other 2nd was in Mayakoba, so I don't think that would have counted for the next year's season,
yes.
I believe. Yes. So with the wraparound. So, but yet it just goes to show, you know, he was playing good in the big events then, and he had it rolling. You know, like I said, number 1 in strokes gained out of every player on tour. That's saying something.
That is very impressive. That's Taylor Williams. I am Colby Powell. Glad everyone's with us here on the 73rd hole. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap this thing up, finish talking a little Ricky Fowler. What can he do moving forward to make himself a major championship? That and more coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back to the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams rolling along here with the Ricky Fowler player profile. Want to remind everybody, find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, search 73rd hole and you will find us. Also, we are thrilled to be partnered with the boys with FromTheStadium.com. So go check that out. Check us out on that website and check out everything that website has to offer. It is phenomenal, up and coming. We're thrilled to be partnered with those guys. So you can also find Taylor and I on Twitter at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101. Let us know what you think about this player profile, any player you would like us to profile moving forward. We've still got some time, and man, we've got we've got more players than we've got time. We could do phenomenal profiles. We debated who to do this week. JT, DJ, Rory, Brooks, Rahm. I mean, there's so many guys. Tiger, Phil, obviously. Those would take a couple of hours, so we might do some two-parters at some point. But we enjoy these. Let us know who you want to see us profile on Twitter, at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101. All right, moving along here on Ricky Fowler. We were talking about how he performed in 2017. During the break there, Taylor, you were telling me about an interesting stat. You know, we talk about having a one-way miss or being able to eliminate a side of the golf course. And in 2017, it was not the year that Ricky finished top five in all the majors. That was 2014. But in 2017 was his most consistent season, and you noticed something about where his misses were.
Yeah, so that was the year that he led in strokes gained total, and obviously he was number one in putting that year, so I mean, that obviously had a lot to do with it, but I found it interesting that it was the only year going back from 2014, and kind of when all of his hype and success truly, really started up until now, even currently, it was the only year that he had a higher left rough tendency than he had a right miss tendency, which is interesting to me because you know, Ricky does play a fade, you know, and so we kind of talked about a little bit at the end of our very last podcast where, you know, it's like, you know, if you lead the tour in a, you know, miss tendency, it's not because you never hit it the other way, it's because you have a miss the other way, you know. And so, you know, I found it interesting that, and you also said as well, that was kind of, you know, he did start earlier with Butch, but I do around that time, you know, him and Butch were still working on some things which led to, you know, a lot of the success that he had. So I don't know if maybe at that time he was going back to maybe some of his, maybe finding a happy middle ground between having his natural ability and kind of what him and Butch were working on, because I think what he's, like we mentioned earlier, what he's done in the last year, even going back then, going back to his flatter swing, quicker tempo, I think it might hurt his back, his longevity, so he might not be able to have as long of a career as he had. And, you know, we'll even bring up what he had done this year in the small sample size. You know, he was heading in the wrong direction for sure. And so I just found it interesting, and I was trying to look for something technical. You know, besides the things that I've mentioned, I couldn't really see nothing that stood out as to why he would hit it left a little bit more than right. But maybe, you know, that was just more of a confidence thing as well, you know, because he was just, you know, just swinging, feel free-flowing, you know, maybe not just trying to hold off shots a lot, you know, just swinging the driver and let it rip.
Yeah, let me just throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. I want to see what you think about this theory. Everybody knows you pull the ball, it goes further, right? So in 2017, his best season, led the tour in strokes gained total. His left tendency miss was up, so maybe he's hitting the ball a little bit further, going up the left side. Maybe he's pulling the ball a little bit more. He's having shorter approaches into greens. Do you think that could factor into it at all? I don't know if you can, if you have exact analytics on that, but I know if I pull a tee shot, as long as I only miss it by 5 or 10 yards, it probably got another 15 yards out of it. Now I'm a little bit closer and I've got a decent look. So I just wonder if that played anything into it at all.
It might be an interesting point, so we'll go back and kind of look on it. So his driving distance that year, and so driving distance all drives. So we'll go off the driving distance because the all drives, you know, he may be laying up that kind of thing.
Could
so we'll
be into 4 iron.
This could be 4 iron. So and that, you know, it also shows, you know, maybe he might be laying back a little bit too, that kind of thing. So we'll just go off driving distance, which is slightly more small sample size because they only pick, you know, I believe it's 2 holes around or yep, something like that, where they think people hit drivers. But it's a general reference point. So that year, to go on your point, he ranked 41st in driving distance. We'll go back and look. So 2018, he was 61st. So he was a little higher than that. 2019, his last few years, he's been 30th. But I think that may have a little bit to do with some of the swing things that he's doing, you know, getting a little flatter, turning a little harder, yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So that might have a little bit to do with it. 2016, he was 23rd. Then he was 39th. So, I mean,
So not drastically different.
No, I think,
just a theory,
I think more or less, I think what I was reiterating to earlier, I think that he was just playing without fear, almost, it seemed like. You know, maybe he was, like I said, going back to some of what he felt natural. You know, I know Tiger talked about that when he was getting back from all of his back issues, you know, trying to find the happy medium between where he was kind of swinging like he did in 97 as a kid, you know, but obviously he doesn't want to go back to that swing because, you know, his back would last for 2 shots. And, he wouldn't be able, he had no clue where the ball's going. So, you know, trying to find a happy medium there. And I think that, you know, cause like you mentioned earlier, that's when him and Butch were working on kind of that second phase transition, if you will. And so I think that that has a lot to do with it, you know, just kind of being more natural with it. I think, you know, now I don't know if he's just trying to, you know, trying to eliminate the left side so much that, you know, he's not able to play naturally or comfortably. But that was a correlation that I saw that I found interesting that didn't relate to the other years that he had played.
Yeah, no doubt. So while we're on the subject of his driving, I want to look at his total driving because, you know, it's Tiger even talked about it in his My Game series that we were talking about on Tuesday. Right now, in the game of golf on the PGA Tour, who are the guys who are winning consistently? It's the guys who are hitting it a long ways. And usually they hit it pretty straight and are pretty good drivers of the golf ball. So let's look at Ricky's total driving throughout his career and kind of break it down for me where he's been and if that's a strength or weakness in his game.
All right, so off the tee here, going back to last year, 2019, he was 55th and off the tee, so about in the top 60-something percentile or so on the tour. 2018, 55, about the same range. The best strokes gained year that he had, he was 38, so he had jumped up a little bit that year. 2016, best year we're seeing so far off the tee, ranked 18th, so that was good. That was when he had his highest driving distance of the year, so he obviously had something going there with the big stick. 76 in 2015, that was the year they won the Players and some of the other big events, so that's interesting. And then 2014, he was 50th, and then 2013, 71st, even going back 2012, he was actually 25th off the tee, which is interesting, and then the rest of his game kind of wasn't there.
15 was his best year winning.
Yes, it was.
15, he won the Players, the Deutsche Bank, and the Scottish that year.
And so, you know, and that might have something to do with it, too. You know, we're going back in here, and I find it interesting, you know, like 2015, you know, he had the success. 2014, you know, he's 50th, and then 2017, even his best year, he went down 38th, or the best overall year, went down 38th, and even his last couple years, he's gone back up into that 50th percentile. So he's kind of fluctuated with it over that. You know, even younger in his career, seemed like to be a better driver, and then he kind of got it, he had a little bit off, then he figured it out, and now he's kind of slowed back off again. I think it just goes back to some of those swing things. I think he needs to go back to what he was doing, like you mentioned when he was working around that second round with Butch, and then even kind of slow his tempo down to where it was back in 2014, where his arms and body were more in sync than they are now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. Glad everyone is with us on the 73rd hole. Take the time real quick to rate and subscribe this podcast wherever you are listening. It would mean a lot to us, and we would appreciate it. Taylor, sand saves for Ricky Fowler around the green. I was looking at strokes gained around the tee and stuff like that earlier, but specifically the sand saves. I know you were wanting to get into that. So break down his bunker play for us, if you will.
Yeah, sand saves. We noticed this correlation with Patrick Reagan as well. The worst year that he had was his worst year that he had out of the bunkers, and there can be a few reasons to that. So we'll go back looking on Ricky's now. So 2019, last year he was 46th, which is fairly good. But we'll go into some of the other years that'll prove as to why that may not be where he wants to be. So 2018, he was 12th. 2017, his best year that we talked about, he finished first, sand saves. 2016, he was 71st, so he dropped down a little bit. 34th in 2015, and then 70th in 2014, 16th out in 2013. So he's been able to fluctuate through this time with sand saves. You notice, I think, what a lot of people don't realize about the sand save percentage is two things. One, you know, obviously, you know, it's about where you leave it in the sand too. You know, if you're hitting it to a short iron in and your ball's plugging, you know, you're not going to be able to hit it out as good if you're on the downslope running away green as opposed to leaving yourself in the right position. So obviously that has a lot to do with it. But I think the biggest thing about being confident with your sand game is because I mean, when I was younger, I watched a Gary Player bunker lesson kind of type thing. And he's notorious for being one of the best bunker players of all time. And he would say that he would practice his bunker shots a lot, not necessarily, you know, because he'd be able to get the bunker shot close, obviously, but it gave him more confidence on his approach shots because he knew that I can aim at this flag, and if I hit it in the bunker, I'm going to get it up and down. And I think that might be the same case for, like, some of these guys, like even Reed's down here, and like we're kind of seeing with Ricky, you know, if he has the confidence to aim at the flag and know that he can get it up and down from the sand, you know, because his strokes gained around the green statistics have been fantastic, you know. So, I mean, we'll go back 2015, he was 78th, even that he was 11th in 2016, 15th in 2017, 31st 2018, last year, and then he dropped down to 63rd as well. And so I think that it just gives him that confidence to where he's able to, his ball striking improves because he has more confidence to aim at the flags as opposed to the middle of the green, which, you know, we brought up in our
talked about that on Monday
on the last conversation, you know. And so this will go just a little correlation here, right here. So 2017, when he led the tour in sand save percentage, his proximity to the hole was only was 7 feet. Was 8 feet 2 inches from the hole. So, you know, that's right in the PGA Tour range of 50-50 yep. make putt. You know, so six. His, that was his proximity. So his 66.
And that's his proximity out of the bunker, not on the approach shot.
Not
on
the approach shot. Yeah, proximity out of the sand, which around the green is inside 25 yards, I believe. And so you know that goes to show. So 68%. So he made. High, it seemed he made higher putts. He led the tour in strokes gained total that year. Or, I'm sorry, strokes gained putting. Yep. So that shows that his proximity, 50%, he got up and down more because his putting was so good. And so we go to 2020, where we are now, which we were going to get into. Before everything stopped, he ranked 176th in sand save.
And that's in six events, I believe.
Six events, yeah. So he ranked one of the worst bunker players. Proximity to the hole was one of the worst. He was... 11 feet, so essentially 12 feet from the hole. And, you know, we broke that down in our and what we talked about last time. You know, if he's 4 feet further away from the hole, you know, his percentages of making that putt are so much less than they were even from 50%. You know, 12 feet, he dropped down to probably 39, even, I mean, upper 30 percentage, somewhere around there. So,
I kind of want to pull it up. I'm trying to pull it up right now if I can get my computer to load. I can't get it to load. But, his percentage would have gone way down from 8 feet to 12 feet getting out of the bunker. So one thing, then, you mentioned 2020 and six events this year.
12 feet is exactly 30%. So his percentage is essentially dropped for a tour average 20% just
just by hitting his bunker shots 4 feet further away.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the difference in being, what, top 25 in strokes gained or in sand saves and being, what'd you say, T176?
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, even 2016, here we'll look at it right here, when he was 70. No, that wasn't the year I was looking for. I'm sorry. 2018. There it is. He was 12th in sand saves, and his proximity to the hole was 8 feet 7 inches. So, I mean, that's not too much different, you know, than where he was even when he led in tour. But that goes to show, you know, his sand save percentage was even higher because his putting was much better. So that goes to show, you know, sometimes – the numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the full story.
Kind of
thing.
Absolutely.
You know that thing. So, I find that an interesting correlation between, like I said, we mentioned with Reed, you know, his worst year's sand game was bad. And I find that, you know, Fricking can just find that consistency, but we notice it just going off these numbers. You know, some years he's good in certain areas, some years he's bad in certain areas. You know, it's like maybe if he found that consistency would be when he's able to get over the hump.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem like there's really any rhyme or reason to when he's going to have a high year in one statistic and not in another. But one thing I want to ask you before we get out of here is this break, this break right now that we're on, for a guy like Ricky, I think almost he needed this. I think this could be a really good thing for Ricky Fowler to just take a few months, not touch the clubs for 6 weeks maybe, try to reset mentally, reset physically, get with Butch, get some things ironed out while not having to be in the fire of tournament play 2 times a month. And then when the tour starts back up, maybe he's a guy who's been able to refresh himself and reset, and we start seeing some better golf from Ricky Fowler, which I would like to see. Because like we said, the guy's only 31 years old. He's still got a lot of really good golf in front of him. We haven't seen a lot of it lately, but I think that this break could have been good for him, and we might see some more of it over the next couple of years.
And you know, it's the same for, I think, any player who is struggling with their game. You know, maybe the break could be a point to get to be able to get things figured out. And it may be the opposite for some players that are hot, like a Sungjae Im, you know, who was coming, you know, hey, guns blazing, all of a sudden, you know, he had a hit on the brakes, you know. So
I would be willing to wager Sungjae has played at least 36 holes every day since we went into quarantine.
That would probably, I'm putting the over at 36 and a half each day, because it would be interesting to see if he's getting that third round in.
Get the emergency nine.
Yeah, emergency fifth nine.
Yes, emergency fit. And he's probably walking, too, carrying his own bag.
Yeah, but his own tour bag as well. He doesn't need a caddy, yeah. So that 50-pound thing or whatever.
He's carrying the staff bag.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, not just for him, but how all these players come back at when Colonial starts up, which hopefully that is when everything is set to come back. But, yes, I do think it can be good for him. You know, obviously, you know, if he's sitting in his house eating potato chips all the time, you know, and, you know, just kind of around watching TV, you know, his game might not get very good. You know?
Yeah, I doubt he's doing that.
But, yeah, if he's doing the right things like we all think that he is, you know, then he might be able to come back and reset. But you know, like I said, I can't believe it until I see it. You know, it's I'm not picking him to win any major before then, and I'm not picking him to win the Players because it's not a major. But
but of course, that won't be till next March now, since it didn't get rescheduled.
Correct. Yes.
Which, by the way, the Players got the shaft end because the Players started. We got a round of the Players in. It gets canceled, and then it doesn't get rescheduled. I would have loved to have seen them kick the 3M Open out of the schedule and stick the Players in that weekend. I understand there are sponsorships. There are reasons why you can't do that. But for golf fans, it would have been so great if they could have just kicked the 3M off the schedule and played the Players.
I know. And I mean, there was that small story however long ago when they thought the PGA Championship wasn't going to be held at Harding Park, and it still may not be, where they talked about going to hold it at the Players.
Which would be awesome.
That would be interesting. You know, like I said, you and me, we talked about some of our other podcasts. We kind of have different opinions and feelings about TPC Sawgrass. So I don't know. I think you would enjoy it.
I love the dramatic finish.
I think you enjoy it. Yeah, it is dramatic. There's no doubt about it. I want a legit, you know, it's like I said, it's not a major course. I like Harding Park. I think it's a good track. You know, like you said, you drove in and seen it yourself. It looks like
it's a local muni. That's what it is. It is a local muni.
But that doesn't deteriorate from the course design. You know, what I've seen, I really like it.
And the GOAT won a major there. So
who did?
The GOAT.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Yeah.
What was that? Oh.
No, he didn't win a major there. No, not Harding Park.
No, he didn't win a major there. He took down John Daly there in the. Gosh, I just watched the Chasing History thing the other day.
Was that the American Express?
It might have been. It was not the PGA. I don't know why.
It wasn't a major. It was a WGC, though. Yeah, I think you're right. It was WGC.
Yeah, and I think he took down John Daly.
If it was the year that he played John Daly, that was 2005. I remember watching it live. It was quite dramatic because that was kind of when, you know, obviously Daly won his major in 91, 95, and he kind of came back. He didn't win for how many of years, won Tory 2004, I think. So then he was kind of just coming back, you know, and so watching at that point, you know, Phil was a big name, and you know, it was kind of, that was the big five era, you know, because there was Vijay, Ernie, and even Retief was a baller.
Retief was a baller.
A straight baller. But at the same time, Daly was still, maybe it was besides Phil, the third, you know, top three golfers, most polarizing golfers at the time, you know. So it was dramatic. And like I said, if you watch anyone else who hasn't gone out there, watch on. It's kind of fun. I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say it wasn't extremely dramatic finish. It should have went longer than it did. Let's put it that way.
Let's just say Daly probably had a couple extra that night in the Hooters parking lot.
He needed it after he blew it. Let's just say that.
Okay, nobody's going to go back and watch this. This is the 2005 American Express. We can spoil it. John Daly had like an 18-foot birdie putt for the win. Ran it about 2.5 feet by, tried to get it while he was hot, and lipped it out.
So he went from winning the tournament to, okay, we are going to go play another hole, to, okay, I'm going to shake my hand and lose.
In 30 seconds.
Even if that, you know, like I said, he tried to get while he was hot.
In 30 seconds, yeah. It was crazy. It was like DJ at Chambers Bay. Hit it from one side, ran a couple feet by, got it while he was hot, and missed it.
You know,
and Tiger standing there like, oh, thanks for the free dub.
Yeah, you know, we've gone on a long time. I don't want to continue.
Oh, yeah, we're totally down a rabbit hole, but it's fine.
No, but I do want to throw this out about the DJ thing. I remember watching it because I really hate Fox telecasts whenever they cover golf. But one thing I like about it is that you can hear a lot of player interaction or player words, things like that. And on the last hole, he was playing with Jason Day, who was the same tournament where he had his vertigo issues, or one of his vertigo issues, you know. So he was kind of grinding it out, you know, and wasn't able to get through on Sunday. And DJ had that little 10-footer for eagle, and Day had like a 3 or 4-footer. And he marked it and looked at DJ's like, "What do you want me to do, man? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to finish out? Do you want me to, you know, what do you want me to do?" Because he's winning. And I don't know if, you know, obviously Jason was trying to do the right thing there, but, you know, did that kind of put...
Did he get in his head?
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm saying. You know, was it one of those things, you know, you try to do the right thing, but at the same time, you do the exact opposite?
If you want to hear more of this conversation, tune in to our future Dustin Johnson player profile, where we will break it all down, all of his turmoil that he has had in the majors. This was a lot of fun. We'll do another one next week, and it might just be DJ, because he's had some interesting finishes in majors. Some of the most interesting in the history of golf, and he's been a phenomenal player. So appreciate everyone joining us today for another edition of the 73rd Hole. Again, find us on social media, 73rd Hole, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Let us know who you would like us to profile on Twitter, at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101. Thanks for joining us once again. We're back next week with more of the 73rd Hole.